Welcome to the Just for Special Education Teachers podcast, the place to be if you just want to connect with other special educators, if you want to gain insights and strategies, or obtain resources to help you in your journey as you grow as a special educator. Today, we welcome back Lisa Winslow to our podcast to talk about an issue that many teachers struggle with, and that is how to teach our students that struggle the most to grasp the concepts and skills necessary to be proficient readers. Lisa adopted a strategy during her 36 years of being in the special education realm as a speech-language pathologist and as a special education administrator. Stay tuned and listen to Lisa share her story and her strategies that allowed her to teach the students that struggled the most how to read with a 100% success rate.
My history with phonological awareness. So I'm going to postpone differentiating between phonics and phoneme and so forth. And I hope that by doing this, it will become clear. So I just want to tell you how this started for me. In the late 90s, in my school district, we used our Medicare money to host a speaker. And the speaker was Candace Goldsworthy, and she is a professor at CSU Sacramento, and she also has a reading clinic in Sacramento. And she taught us, the speech staff, about phonological awareness, which I didn't know very much about and really had not worked in teaching kids to read. So it was interesting for me, and I really actually glommed onto it. And the result, there were lots of results that I found very interesting, and I will try to share those with you in a sequential manner, I hope. So her name is Candace Goldsworthy. And before I even start with Candace, I want to talk to you about a study that I read about in the literature. And it was about in the LA Unified School District, they had a bunch of seventh graders. I'm not sure how many, but what they did was they took the seventh graders, all taking I think they call it a survey class. So they would spend 10 weeks on a subject and then switch to another subject and so forth. So they tried it with phonological awareness training. So they took some, they had a control group who did not receive any kind of training in particular for reading. Then they took another group that did have difficulty. I think they all had difficulty in reading, but the control group didn't get the phonological awareness training or phonics training. One group got phonics training and the other group got phonological awareness training. So they put the students through a functional MRI. You know, when you see the little small lowercase f in front of an MRI, it means that they're doing something kind of practical. So the kids would go through this MRI machine and they would perform various activities like rhyming or, you know, other phonological awareness activities. And what they noticed in general was that the kids with reading difficulty, the brain did not light up. It wasn't, there was like a dark area. And I don't know exactly where it was in the brain and stuff, but that to me was huge. So they did the training for 10 weeks. And I wouldn't be telling the story if it didn't happen, that the kids that got the phonological awareness training versus phonics training, when they went through the MRI again, their brain lit up like a firecracker. You know, it was the blood was moving through. And that really struck me. So, and I remember with the older kids that I worked with, I would tell them about this study. And, you know, then when they would start to master some of the skills, you know, I would say, all right, you got the blood flowing. It's going. You got it, you know. So then I did get Candace's first book around phonological awareness training, and that was called Sourcebook of Phonological Awareness Activities. : Children's Classic Literature. And it was published in 1998. In her introduction, she talks about how the steps that she provides in her source book were researched by scientists about how children develop awareness of sound. And it went in a developmental order. If a baby was 6 months, they could do this. And if they were 18 months, they could do that. So I always felt good about that. That was another big chunk for me. I knew if I followed these steps, the kids, since they're human, would develop the skill. I had confidence that even when they hit the wall, and they did, some of them, it was so fascinating, where they could do lots of things, and then all of a sudden they couldn't do it, the following step. And so it was always, they would look at me like frightened, you know, and I said, no, you're going to be fine. We're just going to practice this. That's it. It's no big deal. You know, you talk about hitting a baseball or playing the piano or whatever. It's not like it just comes to you. You have to practice it. So that was that for me as the teacher, it gave me confidence. You know, the research shows that this is what kids do. You're a kid or you're a child. You will follow these steps. It's, you know, like ordained. So that those were two big things that really made this much more fun for me. I was confident in what I was doing and didn't get thrown when the students couldn't, or it seemed like they just couldn't do it. And, you know, it's interesting because teachers don't have time to take, you know, one student that has hit the wall and work on it every single. It's just, it's not practical. But in terms of intervention, if you end up with an RTI group, you can do this as a speech pathologist, and you don't have to have an IEP. You can use what you know about sounds and so forth, or just follow this book. I taught a fifth grader who, she had been retained, of course, which is why you don't retain kids. And she was bored out of her mind in school, became a behavior problem. And so I took her and taught her how to do this with a group of little kids. She loved it. So it's not like you have to be a speech pathologist to do it. You just have to follow these steps. It's not, you don't need a master's degree to do this.
Okay. So and that's a whole other conversation about not retaining kids, right? That's another episode.
Okay, don't get me started.
A lot of schools of thought on that one. Yes. I'm kind of on the fence on that one. So I would be interested to know what you have to say about that. But okay. Yeah, we can talk about that later.
Quite opinionated about that. Anyway, so I was happy about the developmental, had confidence in that. And the other thing, so this using children's classic literature, the reason for doing that is you want to use language and words that are familiar to the kid. Now, I worked in a kind of a lower socioeconomic area my whole career. And so a lot of the kids didn't know some of the classic literature or nursery rhymes. They didn't know Humpty Dumpty and stuff like that. But a lot of them knew Goldilocks and the Three Bears, that kind of thing. And so I happen to really love James Marshall's version of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It's hilarious. And so I got a kick out of teaching it because I love the book. So you introduce the book. They get really familiar with the vocab. You're making it fun. I used children's literature for almost all the kids that I saw. The Artic kids, all language kids, all of them, because I love it. So maybe part of my success was that I was enthusiastic about these books, loved it, you know. So anyway, so you don't, this is not a vocabulary building exercise at all. You want it familiar to the kid. You don't want a challenge. So you read the book a few times, maybe you look at the pictures, if you talk about words that might not be familiar, so forth. So then what I did was I made myself a grid with, 10 boxes across and 10 boxes down. And then on the left margin, I would write the task or, what step we were on. And then throughout the half hour session, I gave each kid a turn and did it pretty fast. And they could learn. What was good was that sometimes by the time you got to the last student, they understood when they had not understood at the beginning. But by listening to their peers, a lot of kids caught on. And so you have to hit, in order to go to the next step, they have to hit 80%. The little kids really were not too aware of my scoring. I didn't show it to them. I didn't make a big deal about it. I just said, I just indicated on my paper, go to the next step. Sometimes with older students, they know what's happening right away. So I would do five and, because it just tripped. It was easy for them. They were not stuck there at all. So to save time, I would sometimes move them through the older kids, the fourth and fifth graders. This is all at the elementary level, by the way. And again, this is my experience. This doesn't mean it's right. It's just that I found it very successful. So it was right for me. The okay. other thing I used was that the kids had Unifix cubes. And I hope they still use those. They are little plastic cubes that fit together. And the kids loved having their little pile of Unifix cubes. And then I also used from the Super Duper Publishing Company. It's a company that a lot of speech people use, Super Duper Publications. And they have a series of games based on, it's called Chipper Chat. And the student is given a magnet and they pick up chips that are, round colored chips that have a surface on them that will, that can be picked up, that it's metal. So they pick, as soon as they try one or they get it right, they pick one up, and that makes it very entertaining for them. And they can entertain themselves when it's not their turn with the Unifix cubes. They love it. They're colorful, they're pretty. And the same with the Chipper Chat. The chips are colorful and fun, and you can do, as long as it doesn't get too crazy. And it didn't. I never had a problem with that. So interesting. And I'll tell you about this. I forgot to make a note of this on my notes, but it's true. There is something organic about this process. And it's almost like the kids know it's organic, that they're interested in it. It's like a word game that, some of us as adults, I love to play word games. But this is way, way down, at their level, and they like it. So I've never had any problem with anybody getting bored. And of course you have to be prepared and you have to, you got to go at a clip, but they were fascinated even when the kids couldn't get it, when some of the kids weren't able to, they'd hit a wall. And everybody kind of like supported them. Anyway, I did this for years, and it was a fascinating process for me, just watching how the kids responded. Okay, so you have some sort of scoring that you make up yourself. You have something for the kids to do, and then you begin. Now,
before we move on to, okay, sure. So let's just summarize real quick. So the first step is, you are reading a literature book to familiarize the students with words?
Yes, with words, because okay. phonological awareness starts with word awareness. Right. And here you go. Now, on your Unifix cubes or your chips, there are no letters. There is no written sound. When you get into the written sound, that's phonics.
Okay, so step two is when you have the graph, right, with the 10 squares.
Yeah.
10 squares or whatever. Okay, yeah. And then you're using the Unifix cubes. So those are basically, I think, those are just like the manipulatives that some
Tools.
students use for math, right? Those, is that what
Exactly.
you're talking about? Okay.
Yeah. You could
And
use anything, coins. I mean, people have junk all the time, paper
right.
clips, whatever.
And
And
then,
you know what? You don't have to do that. A lot of kids didn't need it, but some kids it helped. And you'll see why when we get into what I ask them to do.
him to do. Okay. So that's, and that is still part of step two, what you're asking them to do
Yeah,
with the
well, what
kids.
I'm asking, there's a ton of steps. So
Okay.
but the setup, this is just setup.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. All right. So phonological awareness consists of word awareness, syllable awareness, and sound awareness. It's the whole shebang. And for some students, you have to start at the word level. These are kids that might not have been read to, that did not pick up nursery rhymes, that, they just didn't have that experience. So words are not, they've never broken up words into syllables or played any of those games. They don't have a lot of experience messing around with sounds and so forth. So you have to start at the word level. Where does that start? It starts with counting words. Hi, how many words was that? I like chocolate. How many words is that? And if they can do it, great. Not all of them will be able to do it. So you have your Unifix cube. I like chocolate. And then, you practice. You just practice.
Got it. One cube for each word. So they're going to demonstrate to you
Yeah,
one
so
cube
those,
for each word so
right,
that they
those
understand how
cubes
many
can
words there
be
are.
words, they can be syllables, and they can be sounds. So you're not introducing letters at this moment. Now, in some of the literature that I recently looked at, just in preparation for this, they're throwing in letters and all kinds of stuff. And I'm going, oi, no, you don't want to do that because kids, it's overwhelming. That's what the teachers are doing. I mean, that's what they're getting, and they're not getting it. I mean, that's what they're exposed to in the classroom, and it's too much. They don't have the foundation. It's like building a house on an unsteady foundation. So it's really important that this be developed before letters and sounds are introduced.
Wow, and that's key for a kindergarten teacher,
Oh, baby.
right?
Absolutely.
Where they're learning their
They have
letters
to
in
know that.
kindergarten.
I think a lot of them do now. I do, I hope. But yeah, it's really, really, really important. And I empathize and sympathize with the time. I do, I get that. None of us have enough time to do anything, it seems like. But it's an important thing to understand that introducing the letters and the sounds, a lot of kids will get it. 80% of the kids will get it. 10% of them are special ed, and 10% need phonological awareness training. And then, therefore, you cut down that 20% that always lags behind. That's why I think this is really, really important for the kids that are lagging, the falling through the cracks kids. They
Right.
can't catch up. Okay, so you start with word awareness, counting words. I am not going to go through all the steps of each of these because we would be here till Christmas. So, but the ones I am emphasizing the ones that I think are very important. But if you can get a hold of this list from Goldsworthy, then you will be able to follow it yourself. If your kid's making fast progress, you just speed through it. But I suggest that you hit every task to make sure that they got it. You never know where the hole is going to be, and they
Right.
don't mind. It's easy. Okay, so now you would I oh here, this is my favorite one. This is identifying a missing word. So you say, okay, I'm going to say three. I'm talking to a kindergartner or a first grader right now. I'm going to say three words. Red. This is if they know their colors. Red, yellow, blue. Listen now. Red, blue. What color did I leave out? Yellow. Good. Now, let's say a kid doesn't, or a student doesn't know his colors. So you don't use those. You don't use colors. You would say, tell me what your sister and your brother's name is. Okay. One is Maria. One is George. One is Mary. Okay. So not Mary. That wouldn't make sense. Joan. You give them words they are familiar with. So then you would say Maria, George, Joan. Okay. George, Joan. Who did I leave out? Okay, well they know their brother and sister's name, so or you could use the principal, the cafeteria lady, the people that they know, and they love it. They love like the kids in the class or the kids that are sitting right there. And I mean, they become so totally engaged. They don't know that they're learning. And my favorite story here is Jason. So Jason was a first grader. Oh my gosh, he was so wiggly. He was, I mean, he was just like he'd had too much coffee. So, okay, he did finally learn how to count words. And I remember him coming by my room in the morning on the way to class, and he jumped into my room, held the door frame by both hands, and said, "Good morning, too."
Oh.
And I said, "You got it. Good job." So for the next one, where the identifying words, oh my, I mean, missing words, that poor baby, we were on this step 19 sessions before he was able to do it. And this is totally subjective. This is not, but to me, it was, subjective evidence based. He calmed down. He was able to concentrate and tell me, and I had to start with one word, lunch. What did I just say? Lunch. That's how we started. One word. And then two words, dog, cat, dog. Sometimes you have to go really down there. And then you build. I mean, that was the great thing. So by the time we got to maybe four words, then he could identify the missing word. I knew he had it. And he could do it 80% of the time.
Okay.
That's an important one. You can use, types of candy, colors, cartoons, Disney characters, games, family names, teachers. Okay. There's other word awareness tasks as well, like filling in the missing word, like shut the, and they have to come up with door or window or whatever, would make sense. And some of them, again, most of them could do that pretty easily, but you never know. And there were a few others, but those first two are very important. Okay, so then you would move on to syllables. You count the number of syllables in highly familiar words. How many? And you talk about what syllables are. They are parts of a word. And you start with their name, Veronica. There's four sounds in Veronica. Not four sounds, four syllables. So you practice again highly familiar words or syllable, no, words. So you practice that a lot. You count syllables and you would move to manipulating syllables. So for instance, I'm going to say a word. But I'm going to say it in a funny way, and I want you to say it the right way. Ground play. Ground play? I never heard of that. What am I trying to say? I'm trying to say playground. Work home. Work home. That's not a word. What am I trying to say? Home, work, ball, base, baseball, shade lamp. What? And they loved it. You know, it was fun. It was satisfying.
Right.
Yeah. Then you go into, you can delete syllables. So say strawberry. Strawberry. Good. Now say strawberry, but don't say strawberry. Good. Now, you do that to 80% success. Say the word fire. Good. Now add truck to the word fire. What do you get? Fire truck. And again, they love it. It's fun. It's archetypal. That was the word I was trying to find before. It's an archetypal challenge and they're drawn to it. They want to do it. Substituting, you can substitute like, let's see. Say baseball. Baseball. Good. Now, instead of saying base, say foot. Football. Okay. Say lampshade. Good. Now, instead of saying shade, say post. Lamp post. So they're moving these around in their heads,
manipulating the words
cube if they want to. But the idea is that the it's better if they don't even need to use the cubes, because naturally you do it faster in your head.
So that sounds easier. So it sounds like you're starting with chunking bigger words, and then the next step is you're going to break it down to the individual symbol letter. Is that how it's going to work?
Yes, you go down. So once the student knows how to manipulate syllables, then you start sounds. Another word for sounds are phonemes. This is how the vocabulary gets all kind of screwed up, because then people start talking about phonemic awareness, sound awareness. But what I'm trying to tell you, and what Dr. Goldsworthy is trying to tell you, is that there's words and syllables too. So it's not just sounds. And starting at sounds can be an overwhelming task for some kids.
And that sounds, so that's the place to start, because when you're starting with sounds, you're not focusing yet on what it looks like on the paper, right? They're not seeing words on the paper. It's just...
No, they are not.
Right. Okay. And so that's important to start there first. Super, okay.
Super duper important. In my professional opinion, it's too hard for them to do the letter at the same time. You're not saving time. You are cutting corners, and you may not get the success that you're after.
That is an aha moment. I think that will be for a lot of teachers.
I think so too. And I do. And they kind of, I mean, I remember I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but their eyes kind of glazed over when I would talk about this, because they don't, you know, they don't have a lot of time. I mean, that's really what it is. They don't have time. But sometimes some of them started doing it. I could hear them, like when they would walk their class to the cafeteria at lunchtime, they would do this as their, say game, and the whole class would say game. Now say it, but don't say guh. And they would say aim. You know, you can sometimes do it as like a filler thing with students. Anyway.
Okay.
Okay. So now you moved on to phonemes, to sounds, and now we're talking about phonemic awareness. And again, we're not talking about letters at all. So you start with the sounds of their names, for instance. Like how many sounds in the word be, b, e. There's two sounds. And you give lots of examples to start with. In all of these steps, you're teaching, but you're just really reacquainting their brain with what they missed. It's in there somewhere, you know, and you're digging it out. So how many sounds in the word dog, dog? How many sounds do you hear? And again, you get a lot of blank stares sometimes. So you just need to repeat. Let's see.
That part can be sort of confusing, even for me, like even as a teacher. For example, let me just give you one example. Sure. Of an example that another teacher gave, and I had to think about it. I was like, oh yeah, that's right. But, and I wrote it down, the word six, S-I-X, right? So it's three letters.
Right.
But some teachers argue that there are actually four sounds. Right. Now, without really me really having to think about it and just see, okay, I'm thinking, okay, that's three sounds. S-I-X. But then the way that she proved it's actually four sounds, if you think of the word sick, S-I-C-K, which sounds almost the same as six, you've got sick. But then in order to get that sound at the end, that S sound, you have to add another syllable. Okay. So that's four.
Yep.
With a word that only has three letters.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. Right.
That's why, I mean, English is like a language. I tip my hat off to English language learners, people that are learning English as a second language.
So do I. I have nothing but respect. I really do. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. And then you have words like, I was looking at my notes here, where you have like words that have the same spelling, but they sound different, or they have a different meaning. And then you have words that have several spellings, but the same sound, like
there you
male
go.
And male.
Yeah.
So it can be really confusing. Okay. I digress.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Those would be later developing thing. Right. After
right.
You,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, so then you go sort of through the same steps. You're identifying the sounds in familiar words. You blend phonemes to make words. Add, what word is that? You know, again, highly familiar words. The other thing in Goldsworthy's steps on this part is she takes blends, consonant blends, and concentrates on those. And it was interesting. There was a second grader girl. She had gotten everything. She was doing so well. And we got to FR blends. She couldn't do it to save her soul. Mm-hmm. She could do SL, ST, SN. She could do all of them, but for some reason, fry, she couldn't do. So that, again, you hit the wall, but she's a human being. She can do this. So you just stick with it. And she did eventually get it, but that was kind of a hard one for me, because right. It was like she was getting everything else, but there was a hole there. She wasn't reading at grade level, so something was going on. Okay, you identify also initial, medial, and final sounds.
During this stage, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an important part. Then you want to delete Now, this is trickier. You get into deleting phonemes. So say snow, snow. Now say snow, but don't say n. So, perfect. Or say snow. Now say snow, but don't say s. No. Not now. And some of the kids that know how to read some words, they'll say, now. No, it's not now. You're spelling it. Don't spell it. Listen to the sound. And that's a tricky one. Sometimes kids will do that. And it's fun because you're saying, oh, you're spelling, you're cheating. Can't do that. That's wrong. You know, it's fun. Fun for me. Adding phonemes, say by. Good. Now at to the end of by, what do you get? Bite, right? Say mall. Now add a s at the beginning of mall. You get small. Substituting, say bad. Now add a instead, oh, this is substituting. Yeah. So instead of a d at the end, add a t. What word do you get? That. Make, make. And eventually, in the phoneme awareness, you get to rhyming words. And some of the kids don't know how to rhyme, does not come naturally. So as you're going through these steps, it becomes much easier. And they learn how to rhyme, and that's a big deal.
Right,
That
okay.
is really a big deal because then when you do get to phonemes, I mean, pardon me, to the grapheme, to the letter, then you can, they can see that take, make, fake, like, you know, are easier to read. What's interesting for me is that I learned to read in the late 50s, so it was all visual. They didn't teach phonics in those days. So I learned the take, make, fake, like method of reading. Eventually it worked out. And remember, 80% of the kids will learn how to read, whatever method you're going to use.
Right.
This does not necessarily make it better for kids that are going to learn how to read no matter what, no matter what method. 80% of them will learn. Doesn't matter whether it's visual or phonic or whatever. But
Okay.
for the, I'm talking about the 10 to
10 to
20% that don't.
20% are kids.
Yeah.
And so would you say that this method was successful for like 90% of the students that you work with? 100% of the students that you work with?
100%.
100%. Wow, that's huge.
I did not give up. I think that's one of the problems is that they get steamrolled over. It's nobody's fault. I don't mean it like that. But, and also you have to remember, I'm taking the lowest of the lowest. You know, I'm taking the group that didn't make it in with the reading teacher.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? And those are the kids that I like to work with. You know, I'm used to working with kids like that. It's fun,
Right,
really
right.
fun.
100% track record. Okay.
If teachers can become aware of the importance of the student being able to manipulate sounds in their heads, you know,
Right.
without the letters, if they can do that, you're home free, you know, and 80% of them will be able to do it on the first day of kindergarten.
I heard a wealth of information throughout this episode, but what I'm going to do is just highlight the key points. It sounds like Lisa's strategy focused on three key areas: words, syllables, and sounds. And Lisa shares a host of activities that you can do for each one of those key areas throughout the podcast. And then she also recommends the book by Candace Goldworthy, Sourcebook of Phonological Awareness Activities, children's literature for access to even more strategies. Do you have any questions or comments that you would like to add to this discussion? If so, head on over to our Facebook page where we welcome your comments. Thanks for listening to the Just for Special Education Teachers podcast, and I hope to see you here at the same time next week.